David Margolin is with us live via telephone, senior editor at Chabad.org, writing on social policy, Jewish life, and Jewish history, with a particular focus on Soviet Jewry. David grew up in a Russian-speaking household to parents who emigrated from the Soviet Union. As a part of his Chabad education, he spent a year studying and working with the Jewish community in Kharkov, Ukraine, and has traveled extensively in the former Soviet Union. He has reported on the Jews of Ukraine since 2014, and his work has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Mosaic, and Tablet, and he is with us live via telephone on a Thursday morning broadcast here at JM in the AM. David Margolin, welcome to JM in the AM.
Thank you very much, Nachum. Good to be with you.
When was the last time you were in Ukraine?
So the last time I was in Ukraine was just before COVID hit. So that would have been January 2020 or maybe February 2020. And that was the last time that I,
And I'm not asking you this from a political standpoint. I'm just curious, as somebody who has the close ties and connections that you do, what were your impressions, what were your feelings, more importantly, when you saw the President of the United States go out of his way to enter a war zone not in control of the United States? Very rare for a president to do that, those of us who know our American history. What were your thoughts when he went to visit Ukraine this week?
So, you know, to me, honestly, it was, I thought it was a very inspiring sight. I know that not everyone's going to agree with that, but for me, as just a student of history, when you take when you look at that and you see what's been happening in Ukraine and kind of the circumstances that they're under for the last year, and then you see the President of the United States go and visit and show support in this kind of very historic way. To me, it was something that was a very nice sight. And it seemed historic. It appeared historic. So
you know,
that's where I am on that.
You know, it's interesting. Ariel Kahana was with us yesterday on the air, and he was in the Ukraine last week with Eli Cohen during the visit. And He sort of gave the impression, again, he has no point of comparison like you do, but he sort of gave the impression that he said to me, you'd be shocked, Nahum. It sort of looks like daily activity is going on there in Kiev. And I'm wondering if you could describe what life was like for the Jewish community in the Ukraine years ago and what it is literally now.
So it's interesting that you're speaking about. So we just published an article yesterday. Like a wrap up from me on, let's say, a look back at the entire year from the beginning of the war till today, including what's happening today on Chabad.org. It's called The Jews of Ukraine Mark 1 Year of War and Resolve.
Right.
So I spoke to people from, you know, the Jewish community throughout the country, just in writing this in the last few weeks. What's very interesting is how every single city has its own circumstances, has its own feel and circumstances. So Kiev, for example, has this you know, they do have daily sirens in Kiev. So when speaking to somebody from Kiev, I was speaking to Dvorley Levenhartz. She's her and her husband run a Jewish Chabad day school, the Simcha school in Kiev. And they, you know, she's telling me how there are points where you can almost forget that there's a war happening. And so it's not the same in Kiev in particular. It's not the same war that they had been dealing with, in February, March, April, where it was an actual war zone and things were getting really hot. Here she goes, life goes on, but then, you know, you have a siren and then you have a missile lands in the core. And so there's always kind of something to snap you out of that feeling that, oh, you're, you know, somehow safe. Now, speaking to if you go further east, to Kharkov, where I spent so much time, but I was speaking to Rabbi Moskowitz, Rabbi Moshe Moskowitz. He's a shliach there since 1990. That's when he arrived in Kharkov. You speak to him, and you know, at night they have a blackout. They have a blackout at night. So you know, so after curfew, the street lamps are out. It's pitch dark on the streets. It's Friday night. It's very difficult to get a minion. We have a minion. They have a small minion,
right?
Because it's literally just for people who are within the very, very close walking radius of the soul, who can basically, and he says, there's no moon or whatever, it's just pitch dark.
David Margolin is with us live via telephone. So, I mean, it sounds like, you know, I'm just trying to get a handle, and this, I'm not judging anybody, obviously. I'd be the first to run if God forbid there was a war and our buildings were being destroyed. God forbid. But I'm trying to get a perspective of who felt from the beginning, okay, there is no future here, and now we must leave, right? There are examples of rabbis who've taken their communities, of rabbis who've, you know, and leaders and, you know, rabbis and rebbetzins who've taken, you know, kids, hundreds of kids to Israel, other parts of the world, etc. And you know, and who decided, and this was the pitch, by the way, we got you on the air because we were told that you know people that are in for the long haul, that from the very beginning decided, no matter what, we're not moving. Was it strictly a geographical thing? Was it strictly, you know, I have the feeling that this place is going to be wiped out, or I have the feeling that, you know, this is going to be temporary and there'll be an opportunity to rebuild?
So there are people, there, you know, the Chabad Shluchim, the Rebbe sent the people on Shluchas, to create to build a Chabad house, to establish Jewish life in a city,
right,
and to be a beacon of light in their city for the long haul.
Right.
And it takes a lot to you know, it really needs to be, wow, we're there's nothing, there's no future at all for a shliach to leave. And there's literally, you know, a handful of examples over the last 75 years. In Ukraine, people didn't know that there's going to be a war. I know in America, we were following this. I was following it, certainly. And it seemed clear. They kept on, you know, the war drums were being banged. And in Russia, in Ukraine and in Russia, actually, which I had been to within days of the war beginning, everyone was like, it's not happening. This is Western propaganda. There's no war. But there was a war. So right away, I think the primary concern, and I spoke to Rabbi Wolf in Odessa, he said the first moment a war starts, the main point is not to panic, not to lose your head, because you have a lot of responsibility. So it's not about do I stay or do I go or what happens. It's about what are the needs of the community. Baruch Hashem, thank God, I didn't lose I didn't panic, I didn't lose my head, and that was like me, my wife, we were able to focus. And they right away began a plan and executed this plan to evacuate children from their children's home, the Mishpacha children's home in Odessa. And then there was mothers with children. You know, the husbands weren't allowed to and are still not allowed to leave the country between 18 and 60,
right,
men of a certain age. So now when it was getting very hot, there was this effort to take people out, quickly in an organized manner, in a massive manner. And so Shluchim, you know, the rabbis, the rabbitsons, left with them. Some of them didn't.
Right, but
many of them, most of them returned already. You know, Purim, Pesach time, they were already back, and they've been back ever since.
But all of this was based on the safety concerns in each specific area, I would assume, right?
Yes, it's the safety concerns, and it's about, you know, the idea of everybody leaving is just not a possibility.
Right, and what we did see hundreds of thousands of people leaving the Ukraine, you know, who know they're never coming back. I'm not saying from the Jewish community, I'm saying in general.
Yeah, but this is interesting because I've spoken to, you know, a shliach in Ravna, Rabbi Schneerson in Ravna, and he says, you know, my basic kind of my core, my nucleus group, they used to come to shul for Friday nights, for right, Shabbos, for in the morning. They mostly have gone, but I have this whole new crew who's come who need material aid, who right, need all of a sudden, like, they feel that community is necessary. So he's like, it's not that I have less work to do. I have different work to do. And you know, so things have shifted. But like there's plenty of work for me to do. Not plenty, there's a lot of work for me to do.
No, I can only imagine. David Margolin is with us. So by last Pesach, you're saying the majority of people who decided to stay were in for the long haul, and on top of that, many, many, many people, based on the way you're saying it, this is what it sounds like, many, many, many people had returned to their cities in Ukraine already by Pesach of last year?
So the rabbis and the rabbisons, the Chabad rabbis and rabbisons, rabbis certainly in many cases their wives are still abroad somewhere. But yeah, for the most part that's been the case. There's very few cities where it's difficult. Look, it's very, very difficult. And again, exactly as you're saying, depends on which city you're in. In Kharkov, it gets really, really hot. And Rabbi Moskowitz told me, we're here, there's people constantly coming and there's just a lot of work to do. And he said, it's the city knows, meaning the general community sees the shul, the Jewish community of Kharkov, as they see this as this beacon of life. They see people coming in for aid, for help. But he says it gets hot here, and once in a while, you just need to, he needs to leave the city for a little bit just because it gets so hot.
Well, that
air out a little.
Yeah,
bit.
That I can only imagine. Now, how many just a number? How many total Chabad centers are there in Ukraine?
So there are 32 cities with permanent Chabad presences, with a Chabad center.
Wow.
Some of those cities have, for example, Dnipro, which used to be called Dnepropetrovsk. Dnepropetrovsk is home to the Menorah Center. It's actually the Rebbe's home city. The Rebbe's father, Rebbe Levi Yitzchok Schneerson, was the chief rabbi of
right.
Dnepr for 20 years. And Dnepr has, more than one Chabad center. Their main center, the Menorah Center, is a 20-floor, seven-branched.
Right, but there's 32 main satellites with other arms attached
exactly.
to them, right? And in Russia, because you're very familiar with Russia, not just the Ukraine, in Russia, what's that number? How many Chabad centers?
It's probably it's more than 32 cities.
Could it be somewhere between 50 and 100?
Yeah, it's something like that.
And you, again, being very familiar with Russian Jewry, obviously from your background, what is the Russian Jewish attitude toward this war? We have painted, or the media here certainly, I would assume around the world, has painted this picture of Putin against the world. That's basically the way this thing comes down. If you want to simplify it, what is the attitude of Russian Jewry toward this war?
I think that's a difficult. It's a difficult question. Nobody. I don't think that there's anybody who. There's a broad consensus within the Russian Jewish community that war is not good, and that people, dying, and this is a very, very, within the Jewish community, this is a very, until just a few years ago, this was all one big community,
right?
And this is all has been a very, very new development, and I don't, not a good one. Where you have all of a sudden these two different countries, and they're on two. Well, they've been two different countries
right.
for 30 years.
Again, with your background, I have to imagine. I mean, I don't want to paint it a civil war with cousins on both sides, but we're close to that. It's got to be Russia versus Ukraine.
Right.
When
so,
it comes to the Jewish community,
right.
you must be talking about literally friends and relatives on the other side of a major conflict.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So my family came out in the 80s. My parents were refuseniks in Moscow, and they came out in the mid 80s. So it's kind of, we spoke Russian at home and all of that, but I don't have that, my family kind of, our Russian story until my own interest in Russia and the former Soviet Union, restarted, but our Russia story kind of ends there. We don't have many
right.
relatives.
Yeah,
anymore.
I got that. But I'm saying that you have to know
but
people.
There are, yeah, exactly what you're saying. It's exactly what you're saying. You have people who are in Russia who come from these communities in Ukraine, vice versa, and it's very, very difficult. And it's certainly not good. And we have to obviously. It's kind of, the Ukrainian Jewish community is facing one thing, which is horrible. And you speak to people. I spoke to people from Mariupol, which is a city that we didn't discuss now, Nachum, but a city that's been completely decimated. And you hear their stories, And it's like speaking to somebody who survived World War II.
Right.
I mean,
I can imagine.
We didn't have food, water, we were boiling water from taking water from the boiler just to be able to, and have to, heat it up just in order to be able to drink it. I mean, just terrible, terrible stories. Death, the burying people in their gardens. On the other hand, there is, so that's the reality of the on the ground in Ukraine, to one extent or the other. In Russia, it's a very difficult situation as well, and it hasn't been easy for them. And I think that when we think about the Jewish communities there and the rabbanim, the shluchim who are there, who are serving their communities very, very faithfully, I think it's a very important thing to keep in mind, just the difficulty of the situation and the fact that they understand that their job. A shliach in a city in Russia, his job is there to be there with his community.
Right.
To be there to shepherd them through this. Again, is no situation right. Where everybody leaves.
Understood.
They're there. This is their home.
Not everybody gets assigned to Honolulu, right?
Hey, exactly. Okay. There's a price to pay. And the bottom line is that their allegiance is to the community, to your people. And it's to be there with them. And, when they're panicking is really not the time for you to pick up and say, I'm, sayonara. I've found a new place in Honolulu.
Yeah, I hear that. David Margolin's with us, senior editor at Chabad.org. We're talking about the war and the situation now in the Ukraine, especially for those who are there trying to help the communities of the Ukraine. I can only imagine it's wartime. I can only imagine, we talk about supply chain issues. I can only imagine the supply chain issues that are going on in the Ukraine. I don't know if the Chabad leaders in all these 30 plus cities are begging for help or, I don't know to what degree they're trying to reach out to people around the world to just get them basic supplies. What is the situation? I mean, are they in need of, flour and water? Are they not at that point? Are they, are they asking for other items? Is there an infrastructure set up, especially through Chabad, to help those specific 30 plus Chabad centers in the Ukraine?
So there is an infrastructure. There's something called the JRNU, which is Jewish Refugees Network Ukraine, and it's basically the umbrella for specifically wartime humanitarian aid in Ukraine. And I spoke to people in Kyiv. In terms of food, they're right now, thank God, it sounds like they have the things that they're able to procure the things that they need. It's difficult in terms of, certain elements of kosher food, perhaps, but not drastic. But there are great needs. Electricity is, the electricity grid has been under attack there since the beginning of the winter. So you have hours a day where there isn't electricity. So JRNU, for example, through obviously donation and help from people around the world. Your website is jrnu.org. I'm not here to plug it, but it's not a bad thing certainly, and right. It's a very good thing. So they shipped 150 generators. So every the schools, the Jewish day schools, the yeshivas, the shuls, which have a communal kitchen and kind of the elements of how you're able to supply hot meals to tens of thousands of people around the country. So they shipped in 150 generators in order, which is very difficult to procure, very difficult to ship them over the border. And remember, there's no airplanes landing in Ukraine. So everything that whatever is being brought in is being brought in through either Moldova, Poland, Romania. It's all by land. There's no, just flights to Kyiv anymore. And so there are those kind of, there is a flow of things, but I think right now electricity is really the dominant factor. Just being able to supply these generators, so they have the shuls. I know that in Odessa, Rabbi Wolf went on a campaign to collect smaller generators, kind of battery powered generators for homes of seniors. Just not everybody can come to shul in order to heat up, and so it's a difficult winter. And not having, if you have electric heat, for example, and an electric stove, which many of the newer constructions have, these are real issues when you don't have electricity for 12, 18 hours a day. so those are the the main kind of physical concerns, material concerns at the moment. And then obviously there's just the each Chabad house, let's say, if there's a school open. So, you know, in Odessa, in Kiev, their schools are open. They have to build bomb shelters. So they had maybe a basement before, but they had to build a bomb shelter in order just to be able to legally open.
Right.
And obviously in order to be able to be safe for the day, because, you know, the unfortunate reality is that that's a missile attack can take place at any moment, and it can hit civilian sites the same way that it can military.
Do you have any plans to visit the Ukraine?
Ooh, I have to speak to my wife. I would really like to.
But likely not.
We'll see. Never say never. I was in Russia actually last year, right before the war started, and I came back from Rostov, which is in southern Russia, on Sunday, and the war started. Yeah, it's about, you know, almost a year ago now. It started on Wednesday night our time. Let's say Thursday morning there in Russia. And so that was a kind of a close call, but look, the Ukrainian Jewish community is a very amazing community. So it's not, you know, I don't want to go there for just for sheer adrenaline purposes, but it's really, really an amazing community. And you see what they've been able to do just for the last 30 years. You know, the Shluchim built up, it's a special place. You know, in Chabad has a very long history in the Soviet underground, Ukraine, Russia, Belarus. These are kind of the places where the stories were made of supporting Judaism, of supporting Yiddishkeit through the harshest times, through Stalin, through, you know, the Gulag.
Oh, yeah, believe me.
The story.
Yeah, believe me,
and,
we know.
And then from 19, you know, from beginning in the late 80s, the early 90s, you have this establishment of this network, and it's grown so much. And I think people still tend to think about the former Soviet Union at large,
right,
Ukraine maybe in particular, as, you know, like, oh, they give out potatoes and whatever. Right. They're all kind of people on their way. But that's not really, you know, that time passed. And you would go to Dnieper as a religious Jew, as an Orthodox Jew. You would arrive in Dnieper, and your mind would be blown away. They have a kosher hotel, a wonderful restaurant.
Look, if we're gonna credit, and I think, you know, rightfully so, the Rebbe for rebuilding Jewish life after World War II, there's no question that his vision rebuilt Jewish life, you know, after the former Soviet Union collapsed. I mean, there's no question about it. That's why for many of us who've seen this evolution, it's so sad to see this setback. You know, it's like, I mean, I know that our feelings on the matter are relatively irrelevant, which I get. We're much more concerned about those whose lives are in danger. But it's just, you know, it's heartbreaking to see when you've seen the incredible growth that you just described. So, you know,
it's true. And you know, Rabbi Wilhelm told me that Rabbi Wilhelm in Jitomir, a very fiery Jew. Jitomir is in Western Europe. It's about 90 minutes west of Kiev. Small town. He went there because, you know, the Shtetlach, Mumkach, these traditional Jewish Shtetlach, Jewish towns, are all spread around Jitomir. So he went to Jitomir, and he built a Chabad house, a shul, a school, and was reaching out to these literally just hundreds of actual shtetls that were still full of Yiddish speakers even through the 90s. And anyway, that's where he went. And he said, look, it's a miracle what we built over here.
Yeah,
that's
of course.
Fact. Because you look back, he says, this is tragic. He was telling me just now, he says, I didn't come here. When we came here, it wasn't just there wasn't kosher food. In Jitomir, I'm telling you right now, people had only potatoes and eggs to eat. That was it. He goes, but things changed. We built this. But bottom line is, I know why I'm here. I'm here because, not because it's a nice place, not because I didn't come here for the scenery. You know, me and my wife didn't come here for the scenery. The Rebbe sent us here to do, you know, the work to really prepare the world for Mashiach. That was, and he says, why does it have to be in this way, this war and bloodshed? I have no idea, but I know that, you know, the goal is exactly the same. And, yeah, and
I get it.
I mean, it's inspiring for me to hear it from him. That was, yeah, that was, you know, like, wow. They just finished, him in his small town of Jitamar had just finished reconstructing his shul.
Right.
It just literally, right, they put in the, I think, a week or two before the war started. So, yeah, you know, do we understand? We don't know. But
I get it.
That the work is the same.
Believe, yeah, me, I get it, but it's emotional to watch it, and I can only imagine what the people are going through, are actually going through. We're way over time. I just have to ask you that. I have to ask my friend Glenn Richter, the leader of the student struggle for Soviet Jewry from that era, but I think there were Margolins on the posters that we used to hold up at the demonstrations, you know, to get refuseniks out of Russia. I think I remember that name on some of. Is it possible your parents were outspoken refuseniks, and that we in America knew about them?
No. They were. I mean, they were refuseniks. It wasn't.
It wouldn't have been.
God, not.
It wouldn't have been one of the names that we were familiar with.
No.
Understood.
We would have been familiar with people, you know, people in their circles, perhaps. But yeah, not. Right. Not. They
all
weren't.
All right. Maybe I once heard about your family. Then that could be. David Margolin, senior editor of Chabad.org. He honestly did not come on to promote anything, but he just mentioned something I want to remind the audience about. If you do want to help with supplies and different things needed in the Jewish communities of the Ukraine, it's jrnu.org. You can check that out, jrnu.org. We're not giving up an opportunity to spread some chesed and give people an opportunity to help our brothers and sisters in the Ukraine. So if you want to look into that, it's jrnu.org. David Margolin, a pleasure to have you on the air. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Stefan. Thank you.
More coming up. It's Thursday. It's JM in the AM.